I suffered from cystitis. You know, it would take hold pretty quickly. Antibiotics were taking longer and longer. He did something called kinesiology. I responded to three different oils, and it was like somebody erasing the pain. It was incredible. It was like something just lifted from me, and the cystitis cleared, and it didn't come back again.
Wow.
Until I was 45, and I was 24 at the time.
The big concept we're talking about here is zoopharmacognosy.
Zoopharmacognosy is the study of how animals self-medicate in the wild. I'm bringing remedies to animals who aren't free to forage for the remedies they need to bring themselves back into health. Every animal is hardwired to be able to recognize plants in their environment that are going to be hazardous or medicinal.
So I can't help but think, like, this has to translate to us as humans as well.
It does,
right?
It does. Yeah.
One of the main problems you face as a pet parent is the daunting challenge of finding high-quality dog food that's both nutritious and attainable. Many of us lead really busy lives, and as much as we want to do right by our pets, the time and knowledge that it takes to create homemade meals is not readily available. Sunday's Food for Dog addresses this issue by offering an air-dried food which is healthy and easy to serve, saving you valuable time without compromising the health of your dog. The air-drying method helps to preserve nutrients and flavors, providing your dog with a meal that is healthier than traditional dry food, but easier than homemade or frozen food. This innovative approach to dog food preparation means the nutrients in Sunday's food are locked in, making it a tastier and healthier option for dogs. Sunday's Food for Dogs is committed to solving common problems pet parents face by providing a convenient, high-quality, and appetizing food option for dogs. By choosing their dog food, you can ensure your furry friend's meals are balanced, packed with vital nutrients, easy to serve, and likely to be enjoyed by even the pickiest of eaters. Use code THEBKPETS for 35% off and enjoy the episode. So, Caroline, first of all, thank you so much for being on today. I have to admit, I think this is attempt number 4 now to record this podcast. So you're an absolute angel for bearing with us. But I'm very excited to get into this topic, and we just can't thank you enough for sharing your knowledge with us and our audience.
Cool. Well, thank you for inviting me. And, you know, I'm a great believer there's always the right time.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
So, you know, obviously it's meant to be now.
Yep.
Opposed to before.
Well, you're very pleasant to work with in that respect. We appreciate you understanding. So, Caroline, before we kind of get started here, can you give us a little insight as to how you got into the position that you're currently in? Because it's a very unique position, I would say.
It is. So, in my early 20s, I studied a year-long course in natural medicines, and essential oils were a part of it. And I suffered from cystitis quite a lot. And if I didn't get antibiotics, you know, it would take hold pretty quickly. Antibiotics were taking longer and longer. I tried other holistic modalities. Nothing seemed to work. And it was my very first class, actually, in with the essential oils. And I was a little bit skeptical, you know, whether these are going to work or not. And he called me up and he said, great, you know, this is Robert Disraeli, we can, you know, use you as a demo. So he did something called kinesiology. I responded to three different oils, yarrow, sandalwood, and juniper. And he massaged it onto my back. And it was like somebody erasing the pain. And I thought, wow. This is impressive. You know, is he the healer or is it the oils? I wasn't quite sure at that point. And I came into class the next day and he said, hey, how are you doing? And I said, well, I don't have the pain on my back. My kidneys are fine, but I feel that it's still hanging in there. And luckily, when I trained, was before all the red tape. And he said, well, put 2 drops of juniper in hot water and drink it. And I did. And it was incredible. It was like something just lifted from me. And And the cystitis cleared, and it didn't come back again.
Wow.
Until I was 45, and I was 24 at the time. And, you know, being through the stresses that one goes through in life, you know, when cystitis can come back. And so I was pretty blown away. But what I noticed, and this is when the whole sort of science, I guess, began, or my journey began, was I noticed that when I needed it, it tasted amazing. And smelled amazing, but when I didn't, the taste and smell wasn't as attractive.
Wow.
As when I needed it. So I thought, okay, this is quite interesting. And then my dad had diverticulitis, and he was going to have a part of his colon removed. And I said, I'm just going to see if this works for you too. See if I can do this. And he responded to peppermint and lavender. And so I put them in. Well, I got him to put them in individual mugs of water. And I said, just be guided by taste and smell. And he was. And he was previously bleeding every day from his colon. And he just bled once, 3 days later, 10 days later, and the colon repaired itself. I wanted to tell the world about these, what I perceived as miracles in bottles. I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Yeah. But I don't think, one, the world was ready all those years ago. And secondly, I had to learn so much more. You know, I had a lot of science to learn. I had to be able to, you know, explain, you know, a lot, you know, especially when I began working with animals. You know, I'd need to explain, well, why would an animal select a potentially hazardous, you know, plant like grapes or, you know, cats with houseplants? That had to coincide with me being able to say how an animal heals themselves with these secondary compounds. So there was a lot of research, you know, probably, yeah, well, it's been 40 years and I'm still always learning, but I'm pretty much in that place where I could confidently explain how scientifically the mechanisms work between, you know, how an animal can self-select the plant medicines they need, and that's with plants that have been in their evolutionary history. Yeah, so, and then my dog was sick, and I thought, I'm going to see if they work with her, and they did, and working with the oils, and that was it really. And then I went to live in California, and I began sort of really researching what horses selected for different problems. Horses are really easy to read. They were easier than dogs because, I mean, basically what I noticed, if they, if there was an inflammatory condition that was anything to do with itis, then they would select German chamomile. And if it was, you know, if there was an inflammatory condition to the tissues that was to do with injury, then they would select yarrow. And so I spent 2 years collating information of what horses selected for various conditions. And then I noticed that if they wanted it very quickly in oil, they would use the underneath of their tongue. And then another oil that same horse might do underneath on top, because it's rich in its vascular supply underneath the tongue. And then another oil that same horse might just want to inhale, which is the fastest route to the emotional center. So horses were very clear. Dogs are very complex. They have, it depends on their breed. It depends on long noses, short noses. It's nothing to do with the size. It's how many olfactory receptors that they have. And their emspatic profile. And so you're working within that breed, how that breed metabolizes medication, and the oils are pretty similar in a way to medications because they're not food. They provide no metabolic value. So they're not going to be taken as food. And so as soon as they enter the body, they're going to be broken down and excreted, and same with medicines. So, so you're looking at the enzymes within that breed, and then the dog is an individual, you know, like us. Some of us are more sensitive to remedies, and we'd need a smaller dose than others who might need a larger dose to achieve the same effect.
So the big concept we're talking about here is zoopharmacognosy. Can you give like a definition of what that actually is?
Okay, zoopharmacognosy is the study of how animals self-medicate in the wild. So I don't do zoopharmacognosy as such, because if I did, I would be out in the wild watching, you know, primates or insects, you know, and what they self-medicate on. I work with applied zoopharmacognosy. So if you break the word down, zoo, animal, pharma, pharmacy, cognosy, knowing. So applied means I'm bringing remedies to animals who aren't free to forage for the remedies they need to bring themselves back into health. And every animal is hardwired to be able to recognize plants that in their environment that are going to be hazardous or medicinal. And if they weren't, the species would have, you know, just wouldn't have made it in their evolutionary history. And when we see a problems, that's usually when plants have been introduced to an animal that haven't been in their evolutionary history. So house plants with cats, they can't recognize them. They can't detoxify them. So those are, you know, that's when one runs into problems. And then when you hear of, you know, situations maybe that are hazardous with plants, it's usually when they've been administered and overdosed, opposed to an animal self-medicating, because they have this innate hardwired ability to select what they need to bring themselves back into health.
That's so crazy. So one of the concepts that we very much believe in is like feeds like in the more animal world. If your dog has issues with kidneys, feeding them kidneys can be very beneficial for them. Does zoopharmacognosy go into animals as well, or is it strictly with plants?
The traditional sense of the word is, yeah, it does animals. You know, animals basically, it's not so much food as such, but they may select millipedes or roll in them and use them as a, yeah, insect repellent. So yes, there are, you know, they may use other therapies or other, yeah, insects, for example, as medicine. So it's when they're using something as a medicine opposed to a food.
Got it. Okay. And so that would make sense, because you don't think of animal parts as medicine, really. What's really interesting to me, what you said, is that essential oils are very much classified in the medicinal category. And I think that makes so much sense to me, because in our society, people use essential oils, what we say, as willy-nilly, just kind of whenever, wherever, however much. They diffuse them, they use them in products. And it really, there should be a lot more intention with it, it sounds like, and a lot more
education.
Yeah, and a lot more research up front before actually diving into the use of essential oils, because you would never just give your dog a random medication in a random dosage. You would be very intentional about how much they're getting, when they're getting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, they are medicines. And that's why, you know, if you hear of hazards or somebody says, you know, an animal had an adverse reaction, don't use that essential oil, because, you know, then misinformation goes out about it. We don't do that if somebody uses the wrong medicine, say, hey, that's got to be banned. Yeah. You can't ever use it again. Whoa. You know, because somebody's overdosed on it, they haven't understood it, they've applied it on the animal's skin. And that's really unfair to the animal, because the animal then loses that opportunity to be able to select the plant medicines that they need to bring themselves back into health. And this is one way where they have control. You know, they can let us know exactly what they need and how much they need. And we can get an idea of what a problem might be as well by what they select. And sometimes we see behaviors that are, you know, out of control, because actually there is an underlying problem that they can't tell us about. Yeah. And we can get that information. And, you know, I've worked with cats, for example, that, you know, can't be rehomed because they can't be picked up. And that cat, or stroked, well, one particular cat that I'm thinking of inhaled a lot of birch and German chamomile as well, which is an anti-inflammatory and a painkiller. And after that, he went round to everybody in the class. He was out of his crate. Everybody could stroke him. He was purring and he found a new home. But all these people who say that essential oils are dangerous for cats, there's very little data on that.
Right.
And I was speaking with a vet in America who said, you know, it's insane, this misinformation, because, you know, they're randomly saying if their animals got sick, oh, it's to do with an essential oil, their cat. And actually, it's put them off track and they've missed a diagnosis thinking it was the essential oil when actually it's something completely different. And it's like, you know, now it's being bantered around not to use lime essential oil for cats.
Oh, and that's interesting.
And that's because a cat was injected in a clinical trial with lime and it killed the cat. I worked with a cat that had liver cancer, 2 weeks to live. And this cat selected lime as a key oil because lime, if you look at the pharmacology of lime, it inhibits blood supply to tumors. And you know, from a selection of oils, this is the oil that the cat selected. And the liver cancer, you know, the liver, his condition, he, you know, struggling with a lot of things, but it completely cleared up. And every time I got an email from her, you know, he was taking less and less lime as the condition began to clear. He was under veterinary supervision as well. And she was like, wow, yeah, this is a miracle cat. I can't believe I'm seeing this. But he took lime for 7 months. And at the end of 7 months, I got an email from her saying, condition's completely clear and no longer he wants lime. Well, all the people that put out that lime is dangerous for cats and dogs, especially cats, that would mean Pepe's life wouldn't have been saved. And this way, you know, he's had 4 years onto his life. It never came back, the condition, but he did live for another 4 years. And she said a really happy life right up until the end. I have so many cases, you know, the cat in the cattery would have been in the cattery in pain because people are afraid of birch. And it's all to do with dosage. You know, cats inhale their remedies. Dogs generally inhale. We're not putting it in their food or injecting it into them or, you know, or putting it on their tongue, which would be an overdose.
Right.
But not for a horse. Because if you look at a horse's diet is, you know, basically a lot of vegetation. And so they've got the plant enzymes or the enzymes to break down a lot of plant material, whereas a cat and dog have less.
Right.
And so their dose is going to be less to match their enzymatic physiology. So you can see by the species you're working with how they're very lightly going to take the oils. And so I think that was a big learning curve for me with dogs. You know, so I'd worked with horses who were taking it by mouth in a similar way, you know, that I did, you know, with Tisserand and to clear the condition, although a horse will take a lot more than me because they have more varied plant vegetation with medicinal plants that they're sort of munching on through the day. But it's fascinating. Well, I've worked with bears as well. So, you know, you look at the bear and the dog, they're going to have similar, they're going to have a similar selection of remedies that will be slightly different from the horse. The horse is very unlikely to have spirulina because it's protein based and horses don't have a protein diet, but the dog and the bear will.
Yeah.
But the bear is more likely to ingest the essential oils than a dog. The dog will only maybe lick an oil if the condition's very advanced. And then you have to sort of put it on your fingers first, rub them together, and it's trace amounts. If they're still desperate, you build it up. But it's only mainly peppermint, birch, and German chamomile, which generally, if they're going to lick an oil, it's those. But a bear will take a lot more by mouth because they have greater vegetation in their diet than the dog, even though they're both omnivores and from the same family, so to speak. So it's really fascinating. The whole subject is amazing.
It's crazy.
So this reminds me a lot of, like, I like good smells. Like, I'm sure a lot of people like good smells. And so I ditched the candles with the fake fragrances, especially for us and for the dogs, obviously. And then I was really into diffusing oils. I grew up using essential oil diffusers. And I like love tea tree and eucalyptus, but then there's all the speculation that they're so toxic for dogs. Like, those are so bad.
It's so sad.
And then we're starting to see like a lot of more natural shampoos have like a little bit of tea tree in them or some eucalyptus. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is happening with this. But it brings me to my second question. I want to talk about the quality of essential oils. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, does that have to do also a lot with some of these, how do I say
overdoses
it?
Yeah.
It's, you know, the main overdoses are all about when people are using them as a flea repellent or an insecticide. So those, if you really look into PubMed and go into, you know, the search, academic search engines, and try and find any sort of papers on it, it's mainly to do with overdose, yeah, with people applying insecticides on the cats. A lot of, when you look up things in the poison control agencies, there's very little data to say, you know, somebody could just think it's to do with essential oil, and so they could call up the poison data agency and then it will be listed as a poison without any backing to it.
That's
and
so crazy.
It's so damaging. And I've just read an article by Melissa Shelton, who's a vet who does essential oils in America. And she's so, you know, exasperated by it as well. You know, it's so sad because they're taking a natural medicine away from these animals. And what are they going to do by doing this? They're pushing them into pharmaceuticals. Is
yes,
that what
they
want to do?
Yep.
Because that would have happened to me if I hadn't had, you know, if I hadn't been told I could put juniper in my hot water for fear of essential oils, I would be back on my antibiotics. Would I still have my two kidneys? I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah, I was pretty young to have those kidney problems. And antibiotics weren't, you know, were beginning to take longer and longer. So I was lucky. I was there before the red tape. And, you know, as Melissa was saying in her article, that, you know, we'd be seeing dead cats everywhere if essential oils were that poisonous. I tell you what's
yes.
way more poisonous, cleaning agents.
Yeah.
You know, they've got artificial phenols in them. You know, it's you know, essential oils, they've evolved with essential oils. Essential oils have been around before the planets before the continents divided, when it, you know, we were just Pangaea.
Wow.
And so all animals will be able to recognize essential oil bearing plants, and they've learned how to utilize them for their health benefits. The problems occur maybe with some of the alkaloids, where that species hasn't evolved, so it's not registered in their DNA. And then, you know, you might say, well, okay, well, how many generations, you know, does it hold on to this information for? I worked with a seal recently that the ancestors have left land plants for between 15 to 25 million years. Okay, the seal had a really you know, life-threatening respiratory disease, and it wasn't responding to veterinary medicine. And I put out remedies that, you know, I thought that he may be more attuned to, like spirulina, seaweed, but I also offered garlic, carrot seed, eucalyptus. He selected garlic.
Wow.
And carrot seed. And I thought, wow, after being separated from land plants, as the ancestors, it's still registering in the DNA. And so what I did was I was thinking, well, how am I going to work with a seal? Yeah, how am I going to, I mean, obviously I can find out what he needs by offering the remedies. So I got shallow buckets and I put garlic in one, carrot seed in another, and I can't remember if there was another oil in another. I think I might have done some spirulina and seaweed. But he was found sitting in the bucket that had garlic in.
Wow.
And within several days, his cough began to dissipate. And then he went back into his pool and he began swimming again. He hadn't been in his pool since he'd been sick. And he had been there a couple of months. He was, you know, from the wild and rescued. So it's pretty impressive to think that that information has been held onto in the DNA for 15 to 25 million years. So when people say, well, you know, have domestic animals lost it? Nope, because it's such an important survival mechanism that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, without it, the species just wouldn't be here today. They just wouldn't have survived if they couldn't recognize medicinal and poisonous plants. It is fascinating. And even insects can self-medicate. And there's peer-reviewed papers on that.
What? How do you work with insects to self-medicate?
I know, it's pretty cool. I usually say to people, if an insect could self-medicate, then your dog, your cat, your horse certainly has that ability. Loads of peer-reviewed papers on this.
Wow.
As with primates as well. So insects basically... if they're infected with wasp larvae, so the wasp lays its eggs inside the caterpillar and then eats the caterpillar from inside out, so pretty horrendous. The caterpillar changes its foraging from lupus to plants rich in alkaloids. Now, if the caterpillar has been infected with fly larvae, so the flies eat the caterpillar from inside out, the larvae, then they change their foraging to plants rich in iridoid glucosides. So it's that refined. So it's incredible the mechanism that all animals have to be able to identify what plant chemicals they need. It's not just any old plant. You know, obviously, if there's no choice, they're going to have the plant that's the next best thing. But, you know, if you can see a caterpillar can differentiate between plants rich in alkaloids and those in iridoid glucosides, depending on whether it's fly or wasp larvae, it's pretty impressive.
That is amazing.
I cannot believe this at all. Like, I believe you, but I'm like, what? So I can't help but think, like, this has to translate to us as humans as well.
It does,
right?
It does. Yeah. We have multiple signaling pathways that alter taste and smell preferences. So depending on our internal state, and the same with animals, food is completely different. So food, food an animal will eat if they don't need it because they can store it as fat.
Yeah.
But medicines, they're only going to, or medicinal plants, they're going to take for their immediate needs. It doesn't get stored in the body.
Wow.
So, we know that, you know, if we're just coming down with something, we go for more antioxidants. So we go for, and that's caterpillars does that too. So when the caterpillars are just infected, they actually don't take the more potent remedies. They take antioxidants. So they're selecting remedies for the body to heal itself, opposed to the more potent remedies that do the work for the body. We do that, our animals do that. So say a dog that maybe, you know, needs to support his immune system, he might be not interested in the essential oils because those are the medicines, but he may be more interested in spirulina that gives him a robust immune system.
Yeah.
If he needs it.
Right.
We have exactly the same. So when we're coming down with something, we're more likely to take something to support our immune system so our body can heal itself. But when it gets a little bit more advanced, then we outsource and we get something a bit more potent that's going to kill that bacteria and help us really get on top of whatever challenge we have. And yeah, humans do it as well. So there might be several oils that a human would like. You know, like you're saying there's quite a lot of oils you like.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably more the case with the oils that work on the emotional level, because there's quite a lot that works with our complexity of emotions. But when you're going for the physical oils, it might be, I love peppermint. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Love lemon. Not so keen on valerian, maybe, or not so keen on thyme. You know, so there will be a group that you like.
Mm-hmm.
If you smell that group, do it once, do it twice, and then you basically put second time round, there's going to be ones you don't like as much. So they're maybe in the medium group.
Yeah.
And the more you do this, you really narrow down the one your body needs. After you've taken it, you smell it again, or it depends if you put a drop in hot water or a dab. If anybody puts anything on their tongue, I wouldn't recommend it if it's more of the irritating oils without knowing what you're doing. But say if you're really attracted to peppermint, for example, and you suffer from stomach problems, then you could put a drop in hot water or two, and then you take a sip. If you can't taste it, you probably need a bit more. If it's really strong, then you wait till it burns off. You just inhale it, and you're guided, like I was with the juniper, with taste and smell. Some people prefer a dab on their tongue when it's, you know, you begin with it sort of just trace amounts in case, because it is very strong. And other people prefer one, you know, their oils and water. And then when they've had their dose, it doesn't smell or taste appealing as it did beforehand. So, and while you're still needing it, that peppermint's always going to be beautiful until you get your dose.
So is this just essential oils, or is this also with the like the herbs in their like pure
Everything.
Form as well? Okay.
It's the herbs as well. Yeah. I usually get people to do a licorice root test. So it mustn't have any sugars in. Because once you put the sugars in, it's something different. So it's a food, basically. So no sugars. And I get people to come up and they smell the licorice, and some people go, oh, do you know, that's really awful. So they're going, I say, okay, go and sit down. And others will say, yeah, it's really nice. And then I say to them, when you smell it, do you feel like you want to eat it? And somebody might say, no. And somebody will say, yeah, I really want to eat that. That's what I do with the oils as well. How does it make you feel? Let them guide you. You know, do you want to? Anyway, so in the case of, licorice root, so, and so I get them to do a little dab on their tongue. So a little bit on their finger, dab on their tongue. And they might go, yeah, that's really nice. They say, okay, sweet. Yeah, it's really sweet. Do it again and again. Oh, gone bitter. It's so simple.
Wow.
It's a mechanism we have. And another person, it might be teaspoon. So it depends on their individual needs and their physiology. It's impossible to overdose when you work with self-medication, because we have that inbuilt ability. And it's a very complex procedure, but in a way it's very simple too. It guiding us to what we need, how much, and how often. Yeah, and there's no box. Yeah, I wish I could put it in box and say 4 times a day, one drop. Because we've all got a different gene expression, and we've got a different, each of us will have different metabolisms. You know, we have a different level of advancement to our condition. And some people will work more with smell, inhalation, and maybe that person may respond well to homeopathy too, sort of more on the energy level. And somebody else might need more of a physical remedy, like I did for the juniper. And so it's working, it's a beautiful dance. You know, so nothing is administered. Nothing is ever put onto the animal without the animal's consent. The animal must always be allowed to walk away. Anything topically, like if I'm making up a gel, maybe the dog's got partial paralysis, then they very often go for peppermint and they like it all scrunched in, and it just brings all the nerve endings alive. But they can walk away whenever they want.
Yeah, that's, you know, amazing.
And you can find out so much. I had this student of mine from Australia doing a Zoom, and she said, I've got this really problem dog that I'd like to work with in the lesson. So I said, okay, what's going on? And she said, well, so five different homes, and each home he lasted 48 hours. Really sweet dog. Were really, yeah, he would go to attack other dogs though, but humans he's great with, but chews up everything, just constantly licking, and then just running off, you know, just really anxious. And I said, have you tried the pain remedies? She said, yeah. I said, what did he do? Yeah, it wasn't interested. Okay. Let's get yarrow, which is a pain remedy for inflammation. The reason I thought pain is very often dogs that chew up everything, it's a distraction from pain or oversniffing. And very often it's when it's musculoskeletal pain. So there's all different types of pain, isn't there? There's gut pain, there's kidney pain, and that's usually manifested as fear. But when it's musculoskeletal, I usually see a lot of chewing and running away and licking things, like material. And so I knew she said that he held his neck slightly to the angle, to one side. So I said, okay, let's bring out the arrow and offer the arrow. So he took a sniff and then walked away. So he was not that interested. And I said, yeah, but he took a sniff. She said, yeah, but he didn't come back. And I said, well, maybe he doesn't want it internally. For a dog, sniffing an oil is more like an internal treatment because they're breathing in those little, you know, the aromatic molecules. Maybe he needs it topically because it's still got to pass through the liver, being breathed in and detoxified. So I said, put some on your hand and just go to where his neck is. And yeah, that's the one clue we've got. And she went to his neck, and then he pushed and positioned himself everywhere he wanted it. And then he put his head down, and he wanted it on his head. And I've got it all on video. And I had the class working as well. I love it when I get everything on video.
I bet.
And then I said, okay. And she said, yeah, his head's really hot. And I said, okay, let's go for peppermint. He wasn't so interested in birch, which is more musculoskeletal. They wanted peppermint, which is sort of a bit like deep heat, but very cooling. And so I said, okay, put some on your hand. And oh my God, he just melted into the most superific dog and, you know, positioned all of his head where he wanted it. Obviously, you know, with peppermints on the fingers, you know, going around the head, I always say to people, never approach that way because you don't want any peppermint to go anywhere near the eyes. So always go in that way. And then around here, just especially if they suddenly turn their head, yeah, you don't want fingers to go in the eyes. And anyway, so then he went into the deepest sleep, and she's like, he's never done this. He doesn't sleep in the day. He just doesn't happen. He's always anxious. And anyway, so she took him, she's in Brisbane, and she took him to a chiropractor. And she said, look, you know, he's selecting these pain remedies. He did select some birch as well. Is there anything you could see? Because he doesn't look like there's anything too much going on other than around the neck. And he said, yeah, you know, no, I can't see anything. He looks pretty healthy to me. So anyway, so she's walking out, and he said, actually, come back in. And so she came back in, and he looked at the skull. This dog was deaf as well. Whether he had been kicked, I don't know, but his skull had been dented in and so on one side. So his brain was being squashed. And so this poor dog must have had the most intense headaches or migraines. And so we can get information, you know, we can help. And so he could tell us by what he selected. And as soon as they know that you're working with them, they communicate, because most animals are used to, you know, you hold on to them, you know, they're told this is good for them, and they don't have a say, you know, right. It gets put on them. And so why would you communicate? You know, I always put myself in their position. If somebody held on to me and they would never listen to me, and even if I pulled away, they said, hey, you know, this is good for you, and they put it on you, it's like, well, why bother? Why bother telling you I don't want it? Right. And we work very sensitively with the dogs in an animal, any animal is so respectful that they tell us exactly what they need, where they want it, how much, and how often. And beautiful. You know, mm-hmm. Most extreme behaviors have been resolved, because behavior is often a way to say there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, we look at ourselves, you know, somebody's grumpy, you might say, got a headache? Yeah, right. and you kind of, you know, and just imagine, I say to my students, you know, if you can speak, maybe you had sort of cystitis, but it wasn't showing up, because cystitis doesn't always show up. It can be inflammatory bladder. And also there's different markers, you know, some people or animals, it doesn't show because we're all different. So unless you come in that standardized criteria, then things aren't always picked up. And even for us, and we can speak and say, hey, we're not comfortable with that, or it's hurting. And they can't speak. They can't tell us when their tail stopped that actually the pain is still going along their spine because they've had their spine cut off.
Right.
And the end of their spine, and that is going to cause nerve problems for the rest of their life with some dogs, and there's constant pain. So we can only tell, or we can only show someone with our behavior.
Yeah.
That there's something wrong.
So because Kenzie asked about herbs, I'm assuming this translates to cannabis as well.
Mm.
Yeah. Have you ever worked with cannabis CBD oil?
Do you know, I did once or twice with my own dog just to see. I mean, She didn't go for it, but that's her.
Right.
You know, she's a shepherd, but she really loves homeopathy.
Yep.
So she's actually taught me a lot about homeopathy and selecting what she needs. And I remember thinking, as she's a German shepherd, well, you know, she does select essential oils, but she's not the most massive sort of essential oil dog for everything. Right. She had a situation where she wasn't selecting oils, and I thought, where do I go? It was, you know, it was anal fungulosis when they have lesions. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to try homeopathy. I hadn't got a clue what I was doing. And I had some, I had some vials in my box, and I thought, well, I'm just going to ask her. And then she selected a selection of three. And she became very peaceful afterwards. And you know, I was looking it up on the internet, see what she selected. I thought, oh my God, that relates to her condition. This is so cool. And then I spoke to my friend who's a homeopathic vet. And I said, oh my God, Tim, you know, I was so impressed with what she selected. And he said, well, for that condition, you really need to get gunpowder. It just works a treat. So
there's
a homeopathic remedy called gunpowder.
Is it actual gunpowder?
I don't know. But anyway, I just listened to it. He put it in the post. And when I offered it to Lexi, it was so cool because she acted as if it was essential oil. And I began to notice that. So I offered it to her and she jumped away from it. And I thought, how can she be jumping away from it? It doesn't even smell. And I thought, ooh, I bet that's obviously going deep. She's probably not quite ready for it. Because usually if they don't want a remedy, there's no reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you get something like that, it's obviously, it's usually a remedy they're going to need. So I would offer every day. And by day three or four, that was her main oil. So she obviously needed to strengthen something in her internal state before she was ready to have her key oil. And then that oil was key for about a month and her whole condition cured itself. I mean, normally she'd have to be on antibiotics and steroids for the rest of her life. And she's taught me a lot about working with the oils. So some oils, homeopathy, she'd just inhale into the bottle and she'd go deeper and deeper and you'll see her eyes heavy. And then when she's done, she'd just turn her head away and finish. Another remedy, homeopathic remedy, she just won't be interested in. And I was saying that to people, you know, wow, it's incredible because she's inhaling it, you know, and sometimes for 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And I said, no, that's not how it works. But yes, it is because it's working for her. You know, there is no red tape.
Yeah.
You know, who put the red tape there? It was us.
Right.
You know, where did we get that information? I'm going with the observational research and I'm seeing she's selecting it. Mm-hmm. And there's some oils or some homeopathic remedies she just turns away from. And then if she wants it by mouth, she'll nibble at the bottle. So then we'll put some little tablets and she might take one, she might take two. But then when she had rose quartz, she wanted about 8 of them. So I thought, you know, my husband said, yeah, but it's only meant to be two. And I said, who said? Yeah, let's go with what Lexi wants. Yeah, because she only wants two of that one, one of that one, eight of that one, none of that one. She knows, trust her. And, you know, she's a rescue.
Yeah.
So she cured herself. So
it has to be very intimate, right? Just like working with an animal and like the trust that you instill in them and just, you know, watching them and noticing, it seems like a very intimate process.
It is. I think it's sort of like, you know, with children or with babies, you know, you can know what that cry means and you know what each expression means.
Yeah.
But so once you get used to it, it's, you know, you sort of, it's that heaviness. You see the body go heavier. You see the eyes go heavier. And it's not always about sniffing. So it's looking at the reaction afterwards. So it's like I was working with epilus. Are you familiar with epilus? It's tumors. It's a benign tumor in the mouth, and it's very common in boxers. This dog had epilus, and I was wasn't paying any attention to any of the auras, much happier barking out the window. And then when I got Thuja out, some people say Thua, but hey, I say Thuja. When I got Thuja out, or when I was doing it over Zoom, and I got Tracy to take the lid off and offer it to the dog barely took a sniff. Yeah, you would think, no, not really interested, but put the lid back on and the dog just lay down and slept for 45 minutes. It was that subtle. From it barking at the window. I've all got that on video too. Just barking, barking, barking. So the cool thing is, basically he selected Thuja on a regular basis after that. Within 1 week, his gums had gone from bright red to pale pink. Within 2 weeks, she was beginning to see his teeth again. Wow. She hadn't been able to see several of his teeth since he was 2 years old, and he was then six.
For four years? Oh my goodness.
4 years. She said after 2 weeks, this is just inhalation of Thuja. Oh. You would have never have thought that it would be needed.
Yeah.
Because it was just one little step. But you're looking at the after reaction. So he lay down and slept. And then after he built up to work with it, you know, more obviously, you know, that she could see how long and how much and that he needed. So a year later, I got an email from her saying epilus is completely cleared. He can eat meaty bones again, which he hadn't been able to do. He can play with his favorite ball again. And her other dog had had epilus, being a boxer, and it was surgically removed and grew back. So I'm kind of looking at epilus. Is it like a sarcoid on a horse? Is it like a something viral, like a wart? Because when you cut it off, it comes back.
Right.
And they're kind of like benign tumors, aren't they? And and it resolved the problem with Tom the boxer. It's amazing what can be seen. But that's why I say dogs are more difficult and took me much longer to learn, because the horses are so easy. You know, if they want it, they'll lick it. If they want it orally, this nostril or that nostril or both nostrils. Whereas dogs, there was so many combinations. You know, looking at the breed, the enzymatic physiology of those breeds and how they're going to work with the oil, how sensitive, you know, so German Shepherds and Collies are quite sensitive. Greyhounds are sensitive, whereas a little terrier will often want to work very close and might want to lick the oil. So there was, there was a lot to learn, really. And then looking at the reactions, it's not just, you know, do they sniff an oil? Oh, they're not sniffing it. I'm going to put it away. You're looking at too, working really slowly with dogs. So when you're offering an oil and they sniff, say they're working with it and you think, oh, have they finished? Because they turn their head away. Not always. So you wait and you don't follow it. If you follow it, the oil, you might be overdosing them. So they get up and walk away. You don't want to do that. So you keep it where it is. But sometimes if you feel they're still working with it and they've turned their head away, but they just want a lower dose, but that's gone on for a little while now, then you think, oh, I'm just going to see if they need it a bit stronger. And sometimes they can take it a bit stronger. Or other times they have a break, they come back, they have a break, they come back, a bit like sipping a glass of wine. Very rarely we have it all in one go, and that's when people were really stressed. But, so, yeah, and so they all work quite differently. So you're trying to, you're figuring out who that individual is and how they're going to work with the remedy, and what their yeses are and what their noes are, and not comparing one dog with the next. So you're looking at all the body language. You're looking at how heavy are the eyes, and have you got that little blink? Oh, you got a blink there. Okay, they're working with it. Some dogs, you just have to go more slowly, and then they seem to build up to want more, and then a stronger dose. But the results from just that small, you know, that inhalation alone of those aromatic molecules, you know, to achieve being able to cure a benign tumor without anything topically is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
So it shows how unreal strong the remedies are. And like you said, you know, they are medicines, you know, and they need to be respected as such, treated as such. You don't just put any oil on a dog.
Right.
You don't use it as a flea repellent. If the dog doesn't want it, it's going to maybe, you know, all the hazards that come up with essential oils, as I mentioned earlier, are generally when people are putting it topically on the skin as a flea repellent. Well, the dog doesn't need it. It's like giving, it's there's not a problem with the dog. If they need to use flea repellents that maybe disrupt the pheromones of the flea, because these are medicines that you're putting on healthy skin or on a healthy dog. Mm-hmm. And any medicine can cause a problem if it's not needed.
Right.
Wow. And the dogs are very sensitive to these aromatics. If they can cure disease on that level, you know, and if dogs, you know, some of the most favorite oils on dogs and cat with dogs and cats, it's so sad because those are the ones on the poisons list. And those are the ones that cure them, like bitter almond. I have cats just purring to bitter almond. You then, you know, I've got somebody at the rescue center saying it's the first time she's seen her cat relaxed, as it's really, you know, quite close to the bitter almond. You've always got to make sure the cat's nose doesn't touch the bottle because it's irritating. The bitter almond is one of the main oils for E. coli in the gut. So if there's an imbalance in the microbiome, then it's very, of E. coli, it's very likely, or in the urinary system, because very often cystitis is to do with E. coli, they're very often select bitter almond. Wow. And this cat, she's the first time he's not yowling when he's smelling the bitter almond. Garlic, I've got cats there purring and purring as they're smelling garlic, and dogs, yeah, dog, because it helps rebalance the microbiome. You know, anything that's overpopulating, it's not necessarily they've got an infection, they're just keeping everything in check with what they're taking.
Yep. Wow. So an average pet parent is listening to this. They are not like the amazing Caroline Ingram, who has decades of experience in this, but they want to start doing this themselves. How can they start doing it? Do you recommend they reach out to somebody for a consultation? Can they buy their own essential oils and start, you know, just maybe opening them and seeing what their dog reacts to? What do you recommend?
I've got a book, Help Your Dog Heal Itself, but I have got some free education on my website, which shows you how to offer an oil. That's really important.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, understanding the subject is, yeah, and what you're doing, it is huge. A lot of people used to come on my, you know, weekend workshops and think, well, I know it all. There's a lot to learn. You know, it's you're looking at ethology, you're looking at behavior, you're looking at responses, you're understanding that individual. So I think, it's just when you're offering a remedy, always start. I would start about 2 feet away. Mm. And don't offer the remedy and sort of look around the room or be distracted. Make sure the dog is in the correct position, as in, you know, he's aware that you're about to take the lid off, and he's not looking somewhere else or looking at the window as such. Because if it's not needed, quickly put the lid on. You don't want to flood the room with a medicine they don't need.
Yeah.
So take the lid off and watch the dog when you're doing it. That's really important. So then you might not see anything. So you think, okay, I'm just going to wait a few minutes. And then you're looking at the eyes. Are the eyes going heavy? And then might not. So if it's a smaller dog, you might need to go nearer just to see, are you registering this? You know, so try and, it's sort of gauging to see if they're working with it. Some dogs are much easier to work with than others. And then I would say sort of look at grouping the oils. So if you're working, don't just sort of go and get any random oil, because then you'd be offering loads of oils. It's going to be way overwhelming to a dog, you know, to offer too many that may not be needed. So try and figure out, is there a problem? Like you might be told that there's a problem with pain. So then, you know, maybe arthritis. So then you're going to go in with some pain remedies. But you might also, if you're offering things like birch, want to support the gut because it works like a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. So, you know, if you know that if the dog's very fearful, you might want to go in with some kidney oils. And then, so for example, in my book, I have the list of kidney oils, so I'll say them now. So the main kidney oils are sandalwood, I would offer first because it's the gentlest in volatility. So if it's not that volatile, it's easier to read the dog, because they're not going to jump back thinking, whoa, I've suddenly got a strong dose. But if it's gentle, you know, if you yourself have to bring the oil up to you to smell it, it means it's got a low volatility. So present that and just get a feel of how they're working with the volatiles. How strong do they want to work with the oil? And then I would go on to, you could either go on to, it depends. If it's a urinary infection, if it's cystitis, then I would go on to juniper, bitter almond, and yarrow for inflammation. If it's maybe after being spayed, and it's maybe to do with more inflammation that's causing discomfort in that sort of area, then it's more gem and chamomile and sandalwood. So you're, and if it's St. John's wort, can be very good for anything menstrual. So either if they're coming into season and discomfort around that area, or after they've been spayed, they may select it as well. So it's much better to work with the group. Carrot seed, wild carrot seed often comes in too. So you're offering sandalwood, then you go to juniper, so kind of read that. And then you might go into bitter almond, read that. And sometimes it depends on the dog, but sometimes I would just do a medium offering for each just to get a reading to see where's the most interest. And then I go back to where there is the most interest. But if they're really working with it, then I'm not going to interrupt that, so I let them continue with it.
Yeah.
So I had my gut oils, I had my bladder group, I had my liver group, and my pain group, hormonal group. So you're kind of sometimes with a behavior, you're thinking, well, where do I begin? How, yeah. You know, I've got no clues. I don't see there's anything wrong. So you're kind of looking at the behavior for a clue. So, you know, are they chewing everything up and seeming like they're running away from pain? Are they trying to get the endorphins up as a way to deal with pain, right, by running everywhere, which is, you know, you'd normally think, well, there's not a problem with pain because they're running everywhere. And if you can't see them limping, you don't put that two and two together. But very often it's in the neck, it can be, or in between the shoulder blades, and you get a completely different dog. You know, they often want it topically there, depending on the dog. Could be peppermint, it could be wintergreen, could be birch, could be yarrow. They're all anti-inflammatories working in different ways. If there's fearful behavior, it's very often kidney bladder. Fear manifests in the kidney bladder. But equally, if that individual has got cystitis, that can manifest as fear. So it can go both ways around, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so,
it absolutely does.
And, you know, if it's, and then if it's gut, you know, I'm looking at clues like, you know, do they not like traveling in the car? you know, what a, sometimes a dog that it seems like they're greedy, it's not. They're just feeling nauseous or there's discomfort. You know, sometimes you gotta, you want to eat to settle your stomach because it's not feeling great. And so people wouldn't think there's a problem. They'd think, oh God, the dog's just eating everything. And actually those dogs, it's usually German chamomile that those dogs select.
Right.
So it's a huge subject. You can get somewhere if you're just, you know, sensitively working with your dog, allowing time, allowing, I think, be patient. You know, give them just, when you begin, just saying, you know, I'm going to give you all the time in the world and I'm going to have you as my teacher. Okay, so I'm going to hand this over to you. And if you can tell me what you need, and I'll try and find that out by looking at your expressions. And then the more you begin to work with them, the more they begin to communicate. I had this wonderful person with autism, and she said how it really helped her autism too.
Wow.
And even her social worker wrote in and said, God, you know, Marie's a completely different person. But her dog, when he wanted sandalwood, because he had to have urinary infections quite frequently, but when he did want it, he would go to the cupboard, he would nudge her and then go to the cupboard and sit by the cupboard. And he wanted it topically. So then when she got the sandalwood out, he'd run in the sitting room and open his legs for it to be put over the bladder area.
What?
I mean, it's amazing how they communicate to you.
That's so
when
crazy.
They know you're listening.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
We would do the same. You know, if you were showing me that actually it's just here.
Yeah.
And then when you've had enough, you say, oh, and then I take it away. And then you think, oh, wow, they're reading me.
Yeah.
I can communicate. We've got a whole new language here.
Right.
And that's when people are boiled over and they just say, this is amazing. I have a whole new level of relationship with my dog.
It's absolutely unbelievable. This is a concept I never thought I would learn about. But Caroline, we've gotten through 3 of the 20 questions today, so we're going to need to do another episode. That's definitely sure. We just want to thank you for coming on and sharing all of your knowledge. This is absolutely fascinating, and we really appreciate you being here today.
Well, I really appreciate you inviting me so I can have a voice for the animals.
Absolutely. A voice for the voiceless, as they say.
Yes. Exactly.
But we really appreciate it. And for those of you that are watching or listening today, thank you so much for choosing to spend your time with us. As always, I'm Bryce.
I'm Kenzie.
And we'll see you in the next episode.